Chapter 1. Now is different. Our time of extremes. American philosopher Henry David Thoreau once stated, quote, "Not till we are lost," in other words, not till we have lost the world, do we begin to find ourselves, end of quote. The first rays of the morning sun were just breaking over the horizon as I stepped down from my truck onto the ground of the ice-covered parking lot. Although the glaze under my feet was unusual for the time of year, simply knowing that fact didn't make my walk to the cashier inside any less treacherous. The leather soles of my boots were absolutely worthless when it came to traction on the ice, and my walk became more of an awkward skate. I was passing through a small town in southern Colorado, on my way to a meeting in Taos, New Mexico later in the day. Remembering the long stretch of wilderness I had to cross to get there from past trips, I'd stopped at the convenience store to fill my tank with gas and grab a hot tea. As I stepped through the door into the warm air inside, an older-looking man was sipping coffee from a thermos at the table near the window. He had just seen the whole display of me slipping and sliding across the ice in the parking lot. As I passed his table, without even looking up at me, he said, "Slick out there, ain't it?" "So, you saw my dance," I asked with a smile. "Yeah, I saw the whole show. Those boots of yours ain't no good in this kind of weather. You need to get some of these," he said, pointing to his thick rubber-soled work boots under the table. "I've got some," I replied, "but they're back home. I usually come through here later in the day when the sun's up and the ice is gone. I got a late start out of town last night, though. Didn't want to drive over the pass in the storm, so I spent the night at the Best Western down the road," as I pointed in the direction of the only hotel in town. I thought that was the end of our exchange, so what I heard next took me completely by surprise. "Yeah, I know what you mean," the man said. "It ain't supposed to be so cold this time of year. But everything's changed. The native people told us this was coming, all of it. They told us the rain would stop, the weather would change, and people would go crazy trying to figure it all out. Problem is, nobody believed them." The man's words were completely unexpected and totally out of context for the morning. At least for me, they were. For him, however, these were obviously things that were on his mind. For the first time, he peeked up at me from under the brim of his threadbare John Deere ball cap. He looked directly into my eyes and with a big breath said, "Now everything's haywire. It's all messed up, man. It stopped raining in the rainy season. My wheat stopped growing when it's supposed to. My cows can't find any grass to eat." He continued, "It ain't good. It ain't good at all, but what are you going to do? You got to keep living. You got to keep trying and just do the best you can. But I'll tell you one thing. This ain't normal. This ain't business as usual. That's for sure." The old man stood up to leave and took one more sip of his coffee. I'd barely spoken, yet I felt I just experienced an extraordinary conversation. As he walked toward the door, he turned toward me one last time. "You take care now, young man. There's a whole lot of nothing between where you're at now and where you're going." I watched as he walked to his old International Harvester pickup. I knew they'd stopped making those trucks over 30 years earlier. I followed him out the door, stood, and watched until the rumble of his truck faded into the sounds of the morning. I thought about what he'd said and wondered if it was true. It's a fact. The world has changed in big ways, but it's hard to put a finger on precisely when the change began. There was one thing the old man said that I couldn't deny. We're living a time that is extraordinary by any measure. Our world today is truly no longer business as usual. Now is different. It's true. Now is different. The world that we grew up with is gone, and it's not coming back. It disappeared before our eyes while we were shopping for weekly groceries, putting meals on the table for our families, and caring for our aging parents. The familiar world we've known and trusted in the past disappeared. The problem is that no one told us it was happening. No one told us that our lives were being changed forever. There was no announcement in the headlines of the Wall Street Journal or USA Today. There was no media special on the cable channels, no investigative report on the nightly news, no expose on a glossy magazine cover to catch our attention at the airport newsstand. It's precisely because the world we knew no longer exists, and its disappearance has never been widely acknowledged in mainstream thinking, that we've never had the opportunity to acknowledge the greatest shift in our lives, impacting the greatest number of people in the most profound ways in the history of the world. We've never had the chance to say goodbye to the things that are gone and to mourn their passing. We saw the evidence of our world vanishing as the mom-and-pop shops that used to line the streets of our communities gave way to the big-box stores that drove them out of business. The family-owned farms that we used to rely upon for our eggs and milk every week have become a rare sight, even in the rural areas of America where they began. The neighborhood shops that we counted on to fix everything from the holes in our shoes and the holes in our tires to the lawnmowers that trim the grass that we used to grow in front of the homes that we used to own are all becoming memories of another time. An entire way of life has vanished, and it happens so fast that many people still don't know it's gone. And because they don't, they can't know that it's never coming back. They don't realize that we're in a vulnerable world of transition and, for now, a time of extremes. This is where the problem begins. Because they don't know the shift has happened, they're still waiting for the world of the past to return. They're waiting for life to get back to normal. Consciously for some, unconsciously for others, they're clinging to an idea of the world that used to be, to the way things used to work, and to where they fit into that world. Many people have put their lives on hold until that familiar world returns. They put off making big decisions like when to get married, when to have children, when to look for a new job in a new industry to replace the one that no longer exists. They've put these things off because they're waiting for the world to settle down and get back to normal. And while they're waiting, they're missing the best part of life, and that is life itself. Waiting for normal to return. I remember a conversation I had a few years ago that beautifully illustrates what I mean by waiting for life to get back to normal. I was talking to a gas station attendant in a small mountain town about the weak economy and how people in the area were coping. "How are things in this part of the world?" I asked. "Has business been good here?" With a shrug, the woman behind the counter stopped counting the change in the cash drawer and looked at me. "Do you really want to know?" she asked. "Absolutely," I said with a smile as I handed her my credit card. "I wouldn't ask if I didn't." "Nothing's been the same here since the mines closed," she began. "People were making good money. They had good jobs, good benefits, and job security. At least, they thought they had job security. Then everything changed. Everything just went to hell. It's always been a mixed bag around here with the mines. When they're open, things are great. And when they close, it's pure hell and people go through hell. A few years ago, the price of the ore dropped so low that the mines had to close, and just like that, there were hundreds of people with no jobs." "That's got to be tough," I replied. "How much of the town works in those mines?" "When they're open, they're the biggest employer in the county," she explained. "In good times, they ran 24/7, using around 600 people to cover three shifts up there." "Wow, that's quite an operation," I said. "How many people live in the town itself?" "Our population is about 1,850 people," she replied. "About a third of the town has worked in those mines. When it's good, it's really good. And when it's bad, well..." "So what's everyone doing now?" I asked. "How are they making a living?" "Oh, they're around," she said. "They're doing whatever they can to get by. Some of the guys are mechanics working on cars by the gas station down the road. Some are cutting winter firewood for locals or baling hay. They're doing just about whatever they can to get by until the mines reopen." "How do you know the mines will reopen?" I asked. "How long's it been since they closed down?" "They closed 5 years ago," she said. "There's a skeleton crew working there now to keep things moving. We keep hearing rumors that they're starting up again, but nobody knows for sure. All we can do is hope." "I'll hope with you and keep you in my prayers," I told her as I signed my receipt. Another customer was coming in as I turned around and walked back outside to the beauty of the mountains that towered over the town. I was amazed by what I'd heard. Driving back to the main road, I couldn't help thinking of the parallels between what the woman behind the counter had just shared about her small community and what's happening on a bigger scale in the world. Perhaps more important, I'd experienced firsthand the way in which people often deal with the kind of change that tears at the fabric of their security in their lives. In the case of the mines, they were closed because the world changed. the ore that the livelihoods of those townspeople once depended upon is now being mined in China for a cheaper price. That change is one facet of an even larger shift in the balance of global resources. For the mining community, it's a shift in favor of another economy located in another country. The point here is that people who are reluctant to release the security of doing what's familiar to them are missing the opportunity to create even greater security in the new world that's emerging. We sometimes justify our reluctance to let go of the past through a belief that the changes we see are temporary. In the same way that music industry executives believe the revolution of rock and roll was a temporary craze when it first appeared in the 1950s, or the way some technology experts believe computers would be a passing fad when they burst onto the scene in the 1960s. When we see so much change on such a large scale happening so quickly, it's a sure sign that we've outgrown the world of the past. And that's why it's impossible to return. Our reluctance to accept that the changes exist may even compromise our ability to adapt. The reason is because we can only cope with changes that we acknowledge.